Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divination. Divination is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and I'm trying something a little different this time around. We got some new gear in shortly after I recorded the interview for this episode, and since I think both the audio and video quality is going to be a big step up from what we've been working with so far, I wanted to make sure that all of the other segments in this episode utilize the new gear. Well, some of the new gear. There's even more video and lighting equipment that we'll be using in future episodes, but you have to come back and see how we put that stuff to use. For this episode, our audio listeners will notice the audio quality is at its highest during this intro, segues between segments, and everything after the main interview. And I'm sure the video viewers have already figured out we're shooting in full 1080p now. I'm rocking a new mic and rig, and even the background behind me has changed. Although, if I'm honest, changing the background had absolutely nothing to do with the gear upgrade and everything to do with the fact that my apartment looked like the sad furniture section of a particularly run-down Goodwill. My fiancé took one look at the Divination YouTube show and said that I had to stop all non-essential spending until we got a new couch, which we're quite happy with. So it all worked out for the best. She even did a nice new painting to hang above it. Anyway, all of that is to say that from here on out, we'll be working to make each and every episode look and sound as good as it can possibly be. Now back to the main event. Our topic this episode is building a Divi consultancy. What do we mean by that? Well, as it turns out, the Divi theme is pretty popular. Elegant Themes has close to 300,000 customers, most of whom use Divi, and with each update, that community continues to grow. Additionally, we're on the verge of launching one of our most anticipated products, the Divi Builder plugin, which will drastically expand the reach of the Divi Builder to work with any WordPress theme. All of this means that anyone who takes the time to become an authority on Divi, what I like to call a Divi power user, will find themselves with a nearly unlimited amount of potential client work. Building Divi sites, helping integrate new themes with the Divi Builder, offering paid Divi courses, creating Divi child themes, and the list goes on and on. That's why today we're going to be joined by our guest host, Gino Quiros. Gino is the founder and creative director of Monterey Premier, a web design agency based in his hometown of Monterey Bay, California. Not only does his design agency build with Divi, but Gino personally specializes in creating Divi tutorials, Divi code snippets, Divi-related CSS tips, as well as free and premium Divi child themes. Additionally, Gino is a frequent keynote speaker about online business strategy, as well as a founding member of Elegant Marketplace, which a few of our previous guest hosts still maintain, but he's since moved on. By all accounts, Gino is a great guy who has already carved out a successful business as a Divi consultant. My hope is that by the end of this episode, you'll feel like you can get out there and replicate some of his results. Gino and I had a great talk the other day, and I hope you guys will enjoy sitting in on it as much as we did recording it. Check it out. Gino, welcome to Divination.
Hey, Nathan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's so good to have you. I feel like this is kind of like finally got you on the show. It feels like a long time coming.
Yes, I've been enjoying all the episodes and have been looking forward to being on here with you.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I mean, every potential guest host of the show I conduct a pre-interview with, and Gino was actually one of the very first pre-interviews that I conducted, but due to scheduling things on my end and the topics that I wanted to deal with up front, it just kept getting pushed back and pushed back. So again, I'm really glad to have you on the show. I've been wanting to do this one for a little while now.
Great, great. Yeah, no, I've been enjoying them. So it's I don't mind being on that waiting list.
What have you been up to lately, man?
Well, it's been exciting. I've been getting back into doing tutorials. I had a very busy summer. And so it feels good to be back into the public again in some of the Facebook groups. I kind of disappeared for a while there, but it was all good. Lots of business and some time off.
Yeah.
Summer time off. And
all very necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's good to be back.
Well, it's good to have you back. And I'm ready to jump into the show. You want to do this first segment?
Yes, let's do this.
All right, well, strap in, everyone, because we've got another edition of This Week in WordPress coming up right now. This Week in WordPress, there are three articles that caught my eye. I sent them ahead of time to Gino so that he could read them and we could talk about them. It doesn't always work out this way, but we lucked out this week, and I'm pretty sure that each article I selected directly relates to our main topic of this episode of Divination, which is building a Divi consultancy. We should be able to jump into some solid discussion right away, so let's get to it. Article number one, how to use customer feedback to increase conversion rates for your WordPress site. Now, this is an article that was published on WPLift.com. It's a great blog about WordPress owned and operated by Oliver Dale. This particular article is all about using customer feedback to increase conversion rates, and it focuses on two techniques, customer reviews and testimonials. It's got some valuable things to say, and I recommend you guys go give it a read. So my question to you, Gino, is as someone who sells both products and services online, how important are customer reviews and testimonials?
Absolutely essential. I've found that by adding the testimonials to my website, it creates validity. And I think having testimonials, it helps to increase conversions about as much as a portfolio, really. Mm. People want to see what people are saying about you. They might not be privy to comments in Facebook groups. And one thing I would add to that is try to add faces and links to the testimonials because people want to see that these are real. And like Amazon.com, as they posted in that review,
right.
It's right there in your face. And so try to have those right there in your face.
Great, great. Any other things that you would add to that list, or is that pretty much sum it up?
Well, no, I would just say that one of the things I was able to do, and so this would be focusing on web developers, Divi users, is try to add not just testimonials from your clients, but people you work with, other designers, other developers. I've added a section on my Monterey Premier site, and it's gotten a great response. It's helped people say, hey, this guy is not only an established authority with clients, but amongst his community as well. And that's opened up a lot of co-op work with other designers and developers.
Article number two, five simple tips to deliver amazing customer support. So this article was published over at torquemag.io, and it was written by Brandon Yanofsky. Without getting into all the post details, let me quickly read off of the five tips. Number one, customers don't remember what you say or do. They remember how you made them feel. Number two, listen. Number three, under-promise and over-deliver. Number four, respond in a timely manner. And number five, go over and above, but don't go crazy. And by that, he means don't let yourself get taken advantage of. So Gino, how much of these tips resonate with your own experience?
Oh man, all of them. I love them all, and I would back all of those sincerely. But I think the one thing that has helped me the most that I would emphasize would be number four and five. I believe they go hand in hand. Respond in a timely manner and go over and above, but don't go crazy. Mm. With my tutorial blogs, because it has such a high profile now, I get about 20 to 30 questions a day, whether it's blog post comments, Facebook messages, and emails. And I do my best to respond to all of them. As in a timely fashion as possible. And you know what? It has created a trust that has helped my branding and my marketing. And they see, okay, this guy goes above and beyond. And I love it. And you know what it does for me is it helps me memorize these things because I'm repeatedly answering these questions. And so anyways, not only does it help me grow, but it gives people confidence in purchasing my products and paying for my services, seeing what they're going to get up front for free.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Okay. Well, that basically covers that one. Let's move on to article three. Article three is called Six Effective Pricing Strategies for Online Businesses. So this article was published actually on our blog, elegantthemes.com, and it was written by one of our writers named Sean Quarton. So the six pricing strategies that he covers are as follows. Number one, psychological pricing, which can be summed up as setting a price and then subtracting a small amount from it. So 25 becomes 24.99, etc. Number two is relative pricing, which is when you set your prices relative to your competitors in order to position yourself competitively. Number three, the power of nine. This is a pricing strategy that describes the peculiar instinct that people have for buying items whose price ends with a nine, even if there are cheaper options, such as the choices between $34, $39, and $44. Most people will go for the $39 option, even though there's a cheaper one there. Number four, avoiding identical prices. So when similar or related products are priced the exact same price, this can often confuse customers and subject them to something known as analysis paralysis, or simply put, the inability to make up their mind. Five, contextual pricing. So this strategy of pricing is a practice of adjusting your prices to take advantage of the context. So think movie theater popcorn, but try not to be that evil. Six, pricing in threes. This is a practice of listing your products in a pricing table where three options are presented and the middle product is priced most attractively. So Gino, we don't have time to talk about all of these in depth, but I'm curious, which of these have you personally used and what were some of the results that you saw?
Well, I've tried several of these different approaches. The ones that stand out to me, or at least the direction I ended up going, was relative and avoid identical prices. Relative, in terms of my services, is what are high-end developers charging in my area and internationally? And, you know, as demand grows, I can increase those prices to those higher rates. It helps weed out some of the smaller end projects. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful. It's helped me increase my rate. And then as far as avoiding identical prices, I think that would lean more towards my products. I like one of the comments he makes. There is the other option is to consciously price your products above competitor rates. Oh, and you look at my child themes on Elegant Marketplace. They are priced pretty high. But when I market the value and I market the premium aspects of it, people walk by and they see it's like going through a car lot.
Yeah,
you're going to go sit in the Ford because that's what you can afford. But you're looking at that Ferrari over there wanting it. So when it goes on sale, you're going to get it. And it's helped set me apart also as a premium provider. It's brought me more business, more clients, a lot of white label clients for other marketing services and IT. So that's the route I chose to go, and it's been very successful for me so far.
Fantastic. So just another follow-up on that. Are there any pricing strategies that you haven't got to try yet that you think are going to be valid for what you do, or are you pretty much set with your current strategy?
Pretty much I've been trying different things, and this is where I feel comfortable right now. But as we'll talk about later, it's all about being flexible and ready to change and adjust at a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so I'm always prepared to try new things.
Cool. That makes sense. Well, that just about does it for this week in WordPress. If you're interested in reading the articles we discussed, YouTube viewers, you can check the video descriptions for the links, and everyone else, you can find the show notes on our blog. Just go to the community category on the right-hand sidebar and check out the post for Divi Nation Episode 6. The next segment of the show is where we get to know our guest host in a little more detail and pick their brain on this episode's main topic. Our guest host today is Gino Quiros, and in addition to sharing his story with us, he will also help us better understand the emerging market of Divi Consulting, as well as what it takes to succeed there. So Gino, what's your story, man? Like, where are you from and what did you do before WordPress?
Cool. Well, ever since I was a kid, about 19, 20, out of high school, I was just, I fell in love with web design, got into it, explored a bit on my own, never took any classes, but it's always been a side gig. And so, you know, born and raised out here in California, you know, I just worked regular jobs, got involved in sales and marketing at a young age, was lucky enough to get promoted through the ranks for a thriving R&D company. Found myself learning business, which was essential to everything else I've done after that. As an international sales manager at 21, I was flying around to Europe and across the United States, and I was a very spoiled and very lucky kid.
Not bad.
Yeah. And then when the bubble burst, I found myself floating around with sales jobs, and I decided I wanted to get more technical. And that's when I got into sales analysis for another R&D company in Southern California, medical products. And they design medical products. And that's where I learned how to do some coding and get into CRMs like Goldmine and Excel and customize it and learn some VBS and stuff like that. And it was then I got to apply some of my web design skills for company intranet and stuff like that. So web design was kind of always on the back burner for me on this as a side job, but something I always wanted to do.
And what specifically sparked your, what specifically sparked your interest in WordPress? Was it personal or just an extension of that work?
Yeah, no. What happened is, fast forward to about 2012, as I'm always doing that on the side, but never doing it full time. Yeah. I had a church approach me and say, hey, you know, I need help with our WordPress. It's crashed and we got to move it. And I was like, oh, no, you know, I only know HTML. And, you know, the funny thing is I jumped in and found out through researching, having no experience with WordPress, mm-hmm. that it was an elegant theme that they used.
Oh, okay.
So I signed up for a membership so that I could get access to their support. And I'll tell you what, to be honest with you, all my WordPress training, all credit goes to Elegant Themes support team, because they're the ones that taught me basically how to get in there and change and fix and manipulate everything.
Nice.
That's how I got into WordPress.
That's awesome. So I always like to ask people, I don't always get to, but I like to, what was your first client site like? I mean, what was that experience? Was it a total nightmare or, you know,
it was time consuming. Yeah. I learned a lot in the process, but, yeah, it was a big struggle at first. But once I started getting familiar with Elegant Themes, the next site I took on, next project, mm-hmm. I recommended Elegant Themes. Oh, okay. And so I got another theme. It was aggregate, and I got to manipulate that one. And after about four themes, I was like, I got this down. I'm only doing Elegant Themes websites.
Well, nice. It sounds like, so you were kind of with Elegant Themes from the very get-go of your WordPress,
yes.
tenure. What made you decide to jump into Divi? Was it just because it was available, or did you see an application? Because the reason I ask is because now your entire business is based around Divi in most aspects. And I guess I'm wondering, was that intentional, or did you just sort of evolve into that?
Well, Elegant Themes, they were really teasing us with that. So I think every Elegant Themes user couldn't wait to try this new thing out. And once I did, having done about four Elegant Themes websites already, I found it so easy to use and customize. And because I had a basic knowledge now of their style sheets and mm-hmm. how they code everything, it was easy for me to get in there and manipulate. And my first project after that was less than a week. Oh, and so the next few projects were just strictly Divi, and there was just no turning back after that. Mm. It was after my second site, I knew that this wasn't just a theme, that this was a framework. And that's what I began selling it as to people, a framework.
Okay. Okay. And just wondering on the, you said going into the support forums and interfacing with the support team was how you started to learn the code. And when you got involved in WordPress, you only knew HTML. You know, do you have other resources or places that you went for code lessons, or what was that process like of learning code?
I didn't really have any other resources. I would just cruise through the Elegant Themes support forum, and I would just look at stuff that other people were posting and mm-hmm. how they were fixing it. Sometimes I would find something I didn't know I wanted to do and I would implement it. And it started to click with me. It's like SJ said the other week, it's like the Matrix, you know, the code you're starting to see what it does before you write it. And that's how it evolved for me.
Okay. Okay. And this is not really the main thrust of what we're going to talk about, but I always like to ask when it comes to specific tools, are there, you know, code editing software programs that you use? Do you just do everything like in a basic text editor? What's your approach to working with code?
Well, DevTools is essential. I use Chrome DevTools. Okay. Firefox's DevTools are great as well. But I usually use the Chrome DevTools, and that's just my go-to tool now. I go make tweaks and adjustments in there and just apply them to the website. I also use Notepad++, and I like to get in there and look at every single PHP file and mm-hmm. The style sheet. Now I pretty much know what's in those. But early on, I would just spend hours reading through the core PHP files, header, you know, functions, mm-hmm. And just seeing what things were doing, what they were calling out. And that was basically the tool I used to do that is Notepad++.
Oh, wow. And how long did it take you to get a grasp of CSS and PHP? Yeah, just since you started, since that became an interest. So from the time you said, okay, this is a problem I need to solve, to you're actually able to, like, you know, be a bit dangerous with those programs or those coding languages, rather. What was that time scale like?
Well, it happened rather fast for me because I really just dug in and spent a lot of time on that. And I would say within about 4 months since the launch of Divi, I was getting pretty familiar with all their, starting with their style sheet, and then over the next few months, their PHP. But it wasn't until I started writing tutorials that it was really sinking in, and that really helped me grow, was writing the tutorials myself. Okay.
You obviously have gotten very, very involved in everything Divi. What does it actually mean for someone to be able to call themselves a Divi consultant?
The first thing would be understanding, I call it a framework. I like SJ the other week said the page builder is the framework itself.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. I agree with that completely. But it's understanding how it works. It's understanding the style sheet, how they call it out and how they structure everything. And I think that's the core to being a consultant, is understanding what works, what doesn't work, what comes out of the box, what you would need to add to it. Mm-hmm. So under knowing under the hood as well as possible. Second, I would think, is by knowing that, you know, when you look at the scope of a project, what's capable, what it's not capable of, what you will have to add to it, so that way you can better estimate your time and the dollar amount it's going to take, so that you're not losing money on projects and you're giving people the right answer right away. They can call you, they can look for customer support. You can be on your mobile phone and give them the right answer. That's what being a Divi consultant really has to be, is to have the answer, at least a resource, a library of resources available. You know, those Divi tutorials, they initially came up to save me time. When I used to answer questions on the, I started answering questions in the Elegant Themes forum, even support forum, after a while, in the Facebook group. It really became, hey, why waste the time? Why not just put the answer here and point people to it? And that's kind of how it evolved, you know? So I think those are the main things to being a Divi consultant, is knowing that.
Okay.
And then, of course, knowing it. That's basically it.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, I think it ties in very well with the last episode of Divi Nation, where we talked with Phil Simon about how to build an effective personal brand. I mean, everything that you're talking about, it's all kind of baked into that equation. I'll just highlight the three main elements that he and I discussed, which was, you know, you have to establish authority, you have to create a relevant brand persona, and you have to ensure that whatever it is you're projecting out into your customer, your audience, that they're actually perceiving your brand the same way that you're intending it to be perceived. Because really, no matter what you claim or what you want, your brand ends up being whatever your customers say it is. Absolutely. So are those things that you would agree with?
Absolutely, 100%.
With that said, I'd love to walk through those points as they pertain to becoming a Divi consultant, starting with authority. How did you begin to establish your authority as a Divi consultant?
Okay, well, that started with the tutorials. It started with being out there in the Facebook groups, answering questions, being public, and creating, putting these out there for free. And, you know, that was basically, as far as the authority goes, was putting everything I know out there as much as possible.
Right. And it sounds like, you know, based on knowing you and seeing you in those places and what you've just said, that a lot of establishing authority, at least in this context, is just participating in the Divi conversation in helpful ways, you know, solving problems for people consistently. I mean, you're everywhere in the Divi community. Like, people see you in the forums, you're in blog comments, you're Facebook groups, you're all over the place. How important has building that community been, and how has that directly affected the success of your business?
Very important. Very important. It kind of, it almost leads into the second question, and I don't want to jump ahead of that second question, that second point, but, it's people begin to trust me. They know who I am.
Yeah.
They recognize my name. It's a wonderful thing when I can open up Facebook and enter one of those groups and see other people answering questions with links to my blog.
right. I've seen that.
They're pointing to my stuff and I don't even have to. That's a compliment. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing.
So yeah, you're right. That does lead into the next thing, which is if you had to define your brand persona, how would you do that?
Yeah. So for me, I want people to see me as an encouragement. That's always been my take. In the Facebook groups, my point is to encourage people where they are. I see a lot of critical comments. Mm-hmm. You know, you should learn basics about HTML before you try to design a website.
Right.
And it's like,
you don't want to come down as the hard ass, you know, like, no, that's not going to help anybody. No one's going to buy from you because, you know, right. you whip cracked them with a smart remark, you know?
Right. And so I want people to know me as somebody who is an encouragement, is there to support, is there to watch other people grow. And that benefits me, obviously, you know. So that's what I want people to see in my brand. Trust and honesty and encouragement.
Have there been times when you've had to make like sort of brand course corrections because people were perceiving you as not as something not what you intended?
Not yet.
Okay. No, that's a good, I mean, that's good. It would be a problem otherwise, but I know, you know, if that had happened, that's always a good lesson to learn from if you don't have to learn it yourself and you can learn it from somebody else.
Yeah, that I've done.
That's I've seen good. Some stuff. So let's talk about some of just the nitty gritty details of your day to day. Cause I really think that, you know, especially with SJ's talk and a few of the other talks, I think people are really responding to, useful specifics, you know, things that they can immediately apply to what they're doing. And I think you've got more than enough areas that we can go to that granular level on. So it feels like to me, I'd like to start with some of your marketing. It feels like to me that creating Divi tutorials, code snippets, child themes, resources, all of these things are sort of natural outgrowths of your conversations in the Divi community. And I'm wondering, is it as natural as it seems, or do you have a way of approaching your topics more strategically?
It's 50-50, but as far as the tutorials go, that is based on what the people are asking for. It's based on the comments I get. If I get them several times, I'll create a tutorial on it. I'm really listening in those Facebook groups to mm-hmm. what people want. Not what I'm going to provide.
Right.
It's what people want. Now, the child themes, on the other hand, that was sort of strategized. In other words, I wanted to have a toolbox of child themes as a business mm-hmm. so that when I have a client and it's got a low budget or a low income, I can just use one of my own child themes and put something up in just a couple of days.
Right.
And so that was strategic. And then I said, well, why not put it on the marketplace and offer that resource for other people as well? Take 20 hours of my work and give it to them for a fraction of that time and cost, and they can have their own library. And so that was very strategic. I thought a lot about that. And that is why I approached Eileen and David and said, hey, let's make a marketplace where we can all sell, because this is what I'm doing. So why not have a marketplace and we can all do this? So that was very strategic. That was something I planned for a while. But as far as my day to day goes, you know, it's split really with my web design that I'm hands on. And the marketing, which is the tutorials, the commenting, and being out there.
Yeah. What's the time split on that like? I mean, do you spend X hours a day designing versus X hours a day? You know, what's that split?
Yeah. So I would say I right now it's probably about 60-40.
Which way?
60 in the design.
Okay.
I do like to be hands-on. I do outsource some stuff. I've partnered with some great folks who are more skilled in areas I'm not, design, development, content. But I love being hands-on. So any work that's done, I still oversee. But that other 40% is, man, it's on Facebook and it's on social media, other avenues. It's on email and it's in responding to comments. I try to keep that going.
Yeah.
One, because I love it. But two is because, man, when people, like SJ said, when people will stick up for you and they'll market you and advertise you because you're taking care of them, there's no better advertising or marketing than that.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people, especially starting out, to realize that the time you spend in the comments, responding to people, doing free work, you know, quote unquote, it's marketing. It's not wasted time. It's not Absolutely. Stuff that you're giving away for no good reason. Like that's, Absolutely. That's what makes your, you know, makes or breaks your sales. What kind of clients come out of these efforts? I mean, you get, and specifically what's the split up? You know, I know you do advisory work. I know you do direct development work. I know you do white label work. How do those different clients tend to come to you? Like what avenues and what's the split on those as well?
Well, lately, I would say over these last 6 months, a lot of my clients turn to other marketing agencies and IT agencies who've found my stuff, read my stuff, mm-hmm. have used my tutorials, saw my child themes and said, hey, you know what? This guy's qualified enough to be our go-to guy. And I wasn't providing white label services. That wasn't a strategy of mine. That mm-hmm. wasn't in my scope. But it was in response to this demand from these new clients. And I love it because they're dealing directly with the client. They'll either, you know, send me a Photoshop and I got to recreate it, or they will trust me to come up with the whole design myself. And I get to just dig in and do the work, which is what I love.
So that's white label for other agencies that are familiar with your work. It's not the end clients, obviously, who are familiar. You're doing work as other agencies. Just want to clarify that, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. They're putting their name on it. They're going out and getting the clients. They're mm-hmm. selling web design services and paying me to do it.
And what, what does that do for your workload? And B, what kind of pricing do you do in those cases compared to pricing for, say, a client who comes to you directly?
Yes. So as far as the workload goes, what I love about it is it's a steady stream. Mm-hmm. I have projects coming in on a regular basis that I'm not having to go waste time on giving quotes and estimates right. and follow up. And that's helped a lot. It's the downside was changing my scheduling approach. I now take on less direct work than I used to, but I try to save time for some direct projects because I love having work in my portfolio. That's important. So I will continue to do that. With the white label, some of the agreements is it's their name. They don't want their clients to know I did the work. So, and that's fine. Price structure. What I decided early on is that I would keep my price structure the same. One, because there's a marketing benefit to having my name on it, having it in my portfolio. And so the thought was, or at least the thought is in some of the conversations online, is to charge more because you don't have your name on it.
Yeah.
And
the client will come back and say, well, we're getting the business for you.
Yes.
Or just bringing it to you. So is that the trade-off? You say, okay, well, fine. Neither of us gets an advantage. My price stays the same.
The price stays the same. And, you know, I won't, you know, nothing goes on my portfolio or anything like that. And at the same time, you continue to provide that stream of work. And so far, it's been great. I've had nobody who's contacted me say no thanks. So far, we've been able to come to an agreement. So it's been good.
Oh, that's awesome. And sounds like you're pretty busy most of the time. How do you, two things, how do you onboard and how do you manage multiple clients at the same time?
Yes, that's something I'm learning right now. it was a pretty tough summer and I got behind on several projects. And just recently, I just learned, I got to figure out how many projects can I actively be working on a given day. So if my mind can only contain three or four projects, I can't be booking eight or nine projects, you know, going on at the same time. And, I used to think I could, but I can't. And so I've come to realize what can I handle in a day? And then I schedule accordingly, even if it means putting projects out 4 weeks. My biggest problem was I thought people would leave me if I put them out 4 weeks. What I found out was people were willing to wait 4 weeks, and that was a big deal. And so that's scheduling that out. And that was the biggest thing to take it on those projects was scheduling it accordingly and saving room for my white label stuff every single day.
So it sounds like, I mean, with the white label and your direct clients, it sounds like a lot of actual web development and design. What does some of your more like advisory stuff look like? What is that process?
That's usually getting phone calls, you know, or smaller, like, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? I bill by the hour with a minimum of half an hour for some clients that I work with on a regular basis. If it's a quick tip, it's a quick tip, you know, and it's not charged. And I do that a lot for my clients, you know, who've trusted me with their work. So
let's say you have an ongoing consultancy agreement. Can you maybe describe what that kind of working relationship would look like? You know, how many times a week or month do they call you? What are those calls, et cetera?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it all depends on what the client's looking for. What I found most often is people can't estimate when they're going to need my help. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to do for what I'm doing, that retainer thing. So I've learned to schedule more like a medical office, like a doctor's office, where I save huge gaps in my day for those types of things. And so I'll schedule, but I'll only schedule like maybe 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And that leaves me 2 or 3 hours for emergency situations, which happen all the time. Mm-hmm. And what I've started to do is schedule 1 day a week where I don't schedule nothing. Mm. And those, if nothing happens, I get to use it on my personal projects. If something happens, that day is kind of that emergency slot for these issues. So I might get a call or a request or an email, and I'll say, hey, you know, this is when I could take a look at that, or this is when we can get back to you. Or I'll just schedule an appointment. Hey, let's plan on touching base tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
That kind of deal.
Oh, that makes great sense. So obviously you're going to get to a point, and you already do, sounds like, get to points where you need to delegate. You need to outsource work. What does a team operation look like in your situation? You're a solo guy, but you deal with other people and partners. What do those working arrangements look like?
Well, right now, what we decided to do is I wasn't ready to open up an agency office here just yet. I wasn't ready to do that. I work late hours, odd hours. And so I reached out to a few people that I worked with regularly, or at least that I know and converse with, and said, hey, listen, let's do this. I need help. I need to outsource. I want to have one source. Say it's design. And I want to have one source. What kind of rates could you offer? And what's your time frame on a typical project? And so that way I can begin to add that into my estimates, and it won't be every single design project, but as much as I can shoot those out when I have too much on my plate, it's going to go to that one person.
Right.
And in return, you know, I promote them on my agency website as one of our designers that works exclusively with us. And for the most part, most of the people we work with appreciate the exposure. They're not an employee. They're just one of our designers. Yeah. And I point them to their website, their business. Sometimes I even refer an entire project to them that I don't want to take on, or I'm just too busy. And so that's worked out great. And we just use Basecamp and we use Skype. And I got folks in India and folks in Texas and Sacramento. So it's worked out really great. And it's the key is establishing a trusted relationship with someone you know. And all these people work with Divi. So that's the bonus right there.
So obviously you've done a ton of different types of work and you continue to do a lot of different types of work. If you could start over knowing what you know now, are there types of work that you would avoid doing?
Yeah, when I first started out, I didn't have a long list of web design clients. So I offered a variety of back office services, bookkeeping, and did marketing, SEO, and all that stuff. But to go back, I would say this. It was helpful to have those because it provided steady income. And so as a web designer, when you're starting out, have another side business going, yes. But be careful how you price yourself low to get the business started. Mm. Because the hardest thing is grandfathering in when business starts to pick up.
Yeah.
And you got some clients still, you're paying you $25 an hour. Right.
And I've noticed from my own experience is that when you get to your breaking point on those things, that's usually when you decide to make a change. But unfortunately, that change takes maybe months to actually fully take effect. So you're sitting there every day working on things where you're already past your breaking point and you're pulling your hair out. So I think that's a good point, is be very careful of what, you know, those extra services are, and be very careful about, you know, when to taper those off and et cetera. So based on that, what have you now found to be your ideal job, like your ideal set of responsibilities as a Divi consultant?
Well, funny enough, I think project management has is starting to take a good amount of my time, really managing projects and the different team players and the schedule and the whole business side of things, you know, doing my own books, my own forecasts, my own financials, my own taxes. And I do all that, my own vision and strategy. So I guess I really should have included that in that split, because I would say I probably spend about probably an hour or two of my day in some of those other areas. And that's essential. That's where the business experience in the past comes in to play now. Mm. I love designing. I love CSS. If I can just build child themes, that would be great, because I have full control what it looks like, full design control. And that's what I love doing the most. I like the hands-on web design. And I love doing the tutorials. So all three of those.
Yeah. And I always think it's interesting. I mean, we all have things that are like in a perfect world where there is no, we got to set all the criteria for the circumstances that we're in. You know, you would just do child themes, but it sounds to me like the business that you're running right now is a direct result of your ideals kind of meeting the rest of the world and, you know, the constraints that puts on you. So like, you know, in order to get to where you want to go, you've always had to make some kind of compromise. And that means, you know, now you manage other people and you outsource and, you know, but it doesn't mean you're doing what you don't want to do. It just means that, you know, you got to make ends meet and you got to make, you know, the circumstances that you have to work with work.
Yes. Yeah. And be prepared to take on new roles and adjust, be flexible. Yeah. You know, one role might require more of your time this week than next week. So absolutely.
Yeah. So there are a lot of things within Divi, and I think this conversation's covered a lot of them, that people could choose to specialize in. So what are some areas that you've noticed as someone actively in being a Divi consultant right now that others could maybe grow into? Like if they are like, hey, I think maybe I could be a Divi consultant, what areas of specializing in could they maybe take on?
Well, as a Divi consultant, I would say, like, for example, my strength would be in the style and using CSS. Mm-hmm. Another area I would think would be very helpful would be, you know, obviously the courses. We see SJ and Corey doing that. But in working with the PHP files and manipulating some of those areas that aren't as easy to modify using CSS, for example, the archive pages, where there's not a whole lot of design options there. It's if somebody was out there providing the resources to make that like a page builder type thing where you have custom headers, custom footers, I think that would be a real niche.
Yeah. Or just selling custom made or customized PHP templates for Divi. So not necessarily something that people can edit, but just prepackaged, like, hey, you know, pay me X amount of dollars for this alternative Divi blog archive or something like that.
Exactly. We're starting to see the plugins start to grow and grow. I remember working with Dan on the very first Divi plugin, the booster. And so that was a really exciting time. But now we're seeing an unprecedented time where several people are putting out plugins now for Divi. So that's going to be a growing market. And we see the consulting and training, and I think there's always going to be room for more of that.
Yeah. I mean, like I said at the top of the show, there's just so many people using Divi right now. I haven't talked to a single person, you know, on this show or off of it, who's like, well, it's really rough out there getting Divi work. Everybody's flooded. Like if you're doing a good job, if you're doing good work with Divi right now, you probably have more work than you can handle. And I don't imagine, you know, that reality is going to change anytime in the immediate future. Yeah. Nothing points to that anyway.
I will tell you this much. I get emails all the time from people saying it's hard to get somebody who knows Divi to take on one of my projects. Everybody that's experienced has a full load right now.
Absolutely. That's why we're doing this episode. I think more people need to get into it, man.
That's right, man.
If I wasn't podcasting all day, I'd be doing it.
Right on.
So I think we could probably talk about this for quite a bit longer, but it is time to sort of wrap things up. At the end of each Divination interview, I like to ask our guest host to leave us with a parting thought, something that encapsulates their take on our primary topic. So obviously today, our primary topic has been building a Divi consultancy. We know that this is something currently in high demand, and that demand only stands to increase as the weeks and months go on. So my final question for you, Gino, is this. Early on, you defined a Divi consultant, an ideal Divi consultant, as someone who understands the Divi framework and its code, someone who understands project requirements for a wide variety of potential builds, and someone who is ahead of the curve on industry trends. So if someone wants to take themselves from beginner status to someone who fits that description, what's the straightest path?
The straightest path, we kind of nailed on it earlier, is to make all that happen, it's going to be the people. It's going to be the people that are using Divi that make you an authority, not just you. If the people love you, if they like you, or even if they just respect you, don't love you or like you, but they respect your work, that's what's going to make you rise to the top. And so I have to say, building a Divi consultancy goes back to my original kind of heart mission, and that's building community. If you have a community of people you've helped that appreciate your work and will talk about you and share your stuff, and you've encouraged people and helped them grow, that's what will make you the authority. When you got other designers and developers who are successful saying thanks to Gino, then that speaks volumes to the world and the community.
Yeah, I think that really makes a lot of sense. However, it seems like maybe a point B of a two-part answer. So like, that's what you do when you have the ability to do all those things. But if you're a beginner status, technically speaking as well, how do you get to the point where you're able to build that community based on the favors that you're doing people or the questions that you're answering? What's that journey look like? And what's the quickest way to navigate that?
Yeah, I would say this is, when you're starting out, you feel like you're not making money because you're charging $25, $35 an hour, but you're spending so much time on the project, it works out to about $7 or $8 an hour. And I say this, that's about as much as it would cost to go take some courses or to take some classes. It's a marketing investment. Take that extra time, be willing to take that cut, and get hands-on dirty. Courses are great, but if you want to know Divi, you got to get hands-on with Divi. There's no courses that'll teach you that. So get hands-on, take on projects, take on free projects, and think of it as an investment in your skill set. And don't feel bad that you're not making money. Know that you're going to lose some money to learn this product, but learn it. Learn it hands-on, cruise through the support forums, have a membership, and look at what people are asking and what they're doing, and keep a library of all this at hand, and then answer questions as much as you can until you memorize it. And you know the steps to fixing people's problems. And that'll get you where you need to go in a short amount of time. You'd be surprised. That's my final thought on that.
That's perfect. I think that encapsulates it quite well. Gino, thank you so much for coming on Divi Nation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Nathan. I really appreciate being on this show. Appreciate what you're doing.
You know, after talking with Gino for an extended period of time, it's easy for me to see why everyone I've talked to so far in the Divi community has had so many good things to say about him. I think he's someone any of us could learn a lot from, and we'd be wise to put his advice into practice. As I said at the top of the show, the market for Divi is only getting bigger, and literally every Divi authority I've spoken to from the community is slammed with work right now. There's more than enough to go around. So if you're looking for something new to get into, some extra income or anything along those lines, hit up the documentation, dive into the page templates and the style sheets, challenge yourself with some new Divi projects, and then land yourself some clients. If your story ends up being anything like the guests we've had on the show so far, things could look very different for you in a year or just a year and a half from now. You know, maybe sooner if you've already acquired a lot of the necessary skills. Speaking of acquiring new Divi-related skills, we've got one more segment left on today's show. It's another installment of Divi Quick Tip, and it's coming up right now. In this Divi Quick Tip, I'll be showing you how to add anchor links to Divi pages. In case you're not familiar with the term anchor links, a common example we're probably all familiar with is when you click on a menu item and instead of being taken to another page, you're simply taken to a different section of the same page. This is particularly popular on single-page websites, but once you know how to do it, you may find a lot of ways in which you'd like to use anchor links throughout your site. Here's how it's done within Divi. For this example, I chose to link a menu item to a section toward the bottom of my page. To do the same thing on your site, you'll need to navigate to the Divi Builder for whatever page you'd like to add anchor links to. Next, find and open the module you'd like to link to. Scroll to the bottom and create a lowercase CSS ID with no spaces. Then click Save and Exit. Congratulations, you just created your anchor. Now it's time to link to it. Since in this example, I am linking a menu item to my anchor point, I'll have to edit my primary menu. If you're following along, just go to Appearance, Menu, and add a custom link. However, instead of a traditional URL, you'll simply put a pound symbol in front of the CSS ID you just created in the Divi Builder. As you can see, mine says pound core-features, which corresponds to the module that I'm linking to. Save your menu and then test it out. You should now have a menu item anchor linked to a section farther down your page. You can add this same anchor link to other parts of your site too, like this call to action button. Or, of course, you can use the same methods to create different anchor links entirely and put them wherever you'd like. Well, that's all for this Divi Quick Tip. If you have a Divi Quick Tip request, you can leave as many as you'd like in the comments. Or you can email me at podcast@elegantthemes.com with the subject line Divi Quick Tip Request. Regardless of how you submit your request, I'll do my absolute best to make sure that every single one is turned into a future segment of this show. I've got a few quick announcements before we close out this episode. Next week, I will be announcing the winners of our very first Divi Site Makeover Challenge. Right now, we have about 15 entries. Some of them are double or triple entries, but the field is by no means too crowded for you to enter. If you have a website that you've redesigned with the Divi theme, shoot us a link as well as before and after screenshots. If for some reason you don't have a before screenshot, which is understandable, you can use the Wayback Machine at archive.org/web. It's a free tool that shows you the design history of just about any website because it archives screenshots of past iterations. Most likely there's already a screenshot of an old version of your website just waiting for you to snag and send in with your Divi Site Makeover submission. Which, by the way, you will want to email me at podcast@elegantthemes.com with the subject line Divi Site Makeover Submission. Again, email your submissions to me at podcast@elegantthemes.com with the subject line Divi Site Makeover Submission. Also, next week on the podcast, I sit down with Andrew Palmer to talk about what it takes to build a sustainable sales funnel. For those who are unfamiliar with the term, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. A sales funnel is a multi-stage process designed to convert website visitors into paying customers. Would you agree with that definition, Andrew?
I would. Yeah. But any sales funnel is that. Is that it's a multi-pronged attack to get somebody into a funnel. You don't want too many in there because the funnel can also be a bottleneck. Because if you get too many inquiries, you can't deal with it. So you need to target your customer base very, very well.
That concludes our show for this week. See you next time.